Hello, everybody, and welcome. My name is Lynn Anderson, and I'll be moderating today's CIDR session. For those of you who are with us for the first time, the CIDR sessions are usually presented on the first Wednesday of the month. Today is an exception to that, at 11 a.m. Mountain Time in Canada. All of the CIDR sessions, including this one, are recorded and available from the CIDR site, and I will post that URL in the text box right now so that that is available. There you go. The PowerPoint presentations will also be posted at the site, as will an MP3 recording of this session. Before we begin, I'm going to point out that we're using a newer version of Illuminate now, and I'll quickly go over some of the features for those of you who are new to this platform. There we go. Starting at the top, you can change the layout, and I've pointed there, of your screen using the layout drop-down menu. It looks like a little white block there. You can drop down and fill your screen or a portion of your screen, however you prefer. Also, there is a notepad that you can use during this presentation to take notes, and then download those to Word if you would like to keep those for later reference. The participant box allows you to see who's in the room, and of course you can use the emoticons to let us know how you feel, and we want to just see the happy ones and the thumbs up and the clapping. And also, very importantly, there's a hands up button there. If you wish to make a comment, you can let us know that by clicking on the hand with the up arrow. And also, during today's presentation, Dr. Egnatoff is going to be doing some yes or no polls, and you can indicate a yes answer by clicking on the green check mark, or a no answer by clicking on the red X, and if you want to give that a go right now, go ahead, and you can see how that works. Wonderful. I see a few people have gone ahead. The chat window allows you to text messages. You can do that at any point during the presentation, and I will try to bring any questions or comments to Dr. Egnatoff's attention, and but he will be stopping periodically to allow for that also. And you can send a message to the entire room or to a particular individual using the drop-down menu next to where it says this room. Finally, the audio button, the microphone, will allow you to speak to us when there's opportunities. Just click on it once to speak and click on it again when you're done talking. And I'd like to just take a moment also to see where everyone's coming from today. And we're going to use the pointer here to indicate where on the map everyone is from. The pointer looks like a little wand to the left of North America there. And click on it, and I refer to it as the mine. Drop your little mine wherever you are. Oops, sorry. I did the wrong one. Wherever in the world you are. And we'll see what kind of dispersion we have with the crowd today. Wonderful. And now I'd like to introduce our presenter for today's session, Dr. William Egnatoff. Dr. Egnatoff is Associate Professor of Computers and Education in the Faculty of Education at Queen's University, where he's worked since 1984. He's taught a variety of courses on the use of information technology in education and recently developed a course titled Global Education Through International Collaboration. He's conducted classroom-based studies of computer use, engaged in educational software design, and has always had an interest in collaborative learning supported by telecommunications. One of his current research projects is the Canadian and Sierra Leonean collaboration in peace education, and he's just returned from spending the first 5 weeks of a 6-month sabbatical leave in rural Sierra Leone working with collaborators in the Center for Development and Peace Education. So I will hand over the mic now so that Bill can share that experience and research with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn, for that introduction. And now that you've seen me, we'll do what usually happens, and I will turn off the video. I'd like to talk with you about some ideas that I've been developing about learning through collaboration across countries. And You've read the advertisement that was sent out, so I don't need to remind you of that. But I'm going to divide the talk in three parts. First, I'll give some examples of what I consider a particularly interesting collaboration, and then outline some of the ideas that frame my ideal for what I'd like to see such collaboration become and what in some instances it already is. We'll stop for a little discussion after that, and then I'll talk a little bit about the course that Lynn mentioned that I have designed and how it's going. And then the third part, which will be a little bit longer than the other parts, talk about my work in Sierra Leone and the collaboration that I'm doing there and the challenges and rewards of that work. I'll go back to one of my favorite examples. An elementary teacher, primary teacher, worked with some grade sevens and eights. This was in the days of the microcomputer and when you used a 300 baud modem. He looked around on the internet on various lists. It was really before what we call the internet today, and came across an international ocean treaty negotiation simulation that he thought would be very interesting. Now, most of the participants in that were university groups, but with this 300 baud pipeline and several months of work, his grade 7 and 8s did a huge amount of research. They involved their parents, they went to libraries, and they focused on the near shore and preserving that. Each participant group had a fictitious country, and at the end, they all revealed who they were, and the university groups were astonished that these were elementary school children. They had done such a fine job of their work. So that very narrow pipeline led to a very, very rich interaction in each of the settings and interaction between the groups. Another favorite person of mine is Dalla Nayokaitis, who works in the Ottawa Carleton Separate Board, and for many years ran a grade 4 or 5 pull-out enrichment program. And she would have usually several communication programs going every year. One of them that was particularly interesting early on was some research that the students did on their television viewing habits. They had participants from several countries, and I think they had about 4,000 data sets that they had to enter into their database or spreadsheet and analyze. They even told the experts from Statistics Canada that they weren't chunking people properly. They needed to have a finer division of pre-adolescence and adolescence because they had different viewing habits. Another major project that involved a lot of research and a lot of advocacy and publishing of useful information was a campaign against landmines. Another teacher that I've had the privilege of working with a lot is Stephen McKinnon, a high school teacher from Athens, Ontario, and he has participated in many, many telecommunications-based activities, including competitions from the Global Virtual Classroom. And knowing that students were going to be doing those things really attracted them to his courses. So those are just a few examples, and I'm sure you know many more. I'll give a few examples now from my teacher candidates that they've been involved with recently. Last year I had two candidates go to Brazil and one in Ottawa, and they got their schools collaborating on some music exchange, which didn't really take off, but what really did was a recipe exchange. The school in Ottawa was a bilingual French immersion school, so they worked in French and Portuguese and English and exchanged recipes and tried them out. And lo and behold, in Brazil they have a curd cheese that makes very good poutine, which they loved. Another one that I'll show you just quickly was a teacher candidate who didn't travel for her practicum, but she worked with a school in Mississauga and collaborated with a teacher in the village of Mapaki in Sierra Leone. And the students contributed art, which she scanned and put together in an online art gallery. So I'm just going to give you the URL for that so that you can have a look. So just one moment here. And I'm going to use the web tour feature, paste the URL in. So in just a moment, you should have a web browser coming up and with peace portraits. And if you move your mouse over either North America or Africa and click on that, then you should see some pictures starting to come up, and you can scroll through them at your leisure. I had a five-person team, actually two from another course, Teaching and Learning Online, who developed an ecological footprint curriculum and tried without too much success to get participants during the practicum. So that was both a success in terms of teamwork and the challenge in terms of getting participation. Another candidate had a very interesting practicum on an organic farm working in the non-formal education sector in Costa Rica. And part of her work there was to see what opportunities there might be for future international collaboration of the sort that we envisaged in the course. And she now is actually collaborating from Trinidad, where she's teaching, with a school in Sierra Leone, and I'll be talking about that later. Another person had many connections around the world and ended up spending most of his time developing and having some teachers test some education resources. And one of them was If the Earth Were a Village. And the other was one on the status of women in the world. I'm going to now just show you a page where you can get the reports on those practica. So again, I'm going to push that URL out. And we have a MediaWiki wiki where candidates at the end of the course have the option of publishing a report. So here is the page then with links to all the reports, the art galleries there, one on digital storytelling and so on. Quite a few others, and at the end of this year in April, we'll have another 24 reports on there. Many, many resources are used by these teacher candidates and by teachers who want to do international collaboration to help find partners and resources. These are some of the ones that I tell my students about and that my guests, such as Stephen McKinnon, also share with them. iEARN, of course, and iEARN Canada have websites and many projects. And all of these, some of you, these you may not know about. If you don't, I'd suggest you Google them. They all have excellent websites. So that's a very important part of this international collaboration, sites that and organizations that help to support it. Well, now comes the ideas, and I'm just going to read a paragraph from a paper that I'm writing about my notions of binational curriculum. So this really frames my ideal. When teachers attempt to collaborate across cultural and political boundaries to develop curriculum, the essence of which is collaboration, much changes. Curriculum is usually framed within a single political jurisdiction in accord with public policy generated within that jurisdiction. In contrast, international curricular collaboration requires that teachers address commonalities and differences in culture, language, public expectations, teaching methods, resources, local curriculum, school calendars, homework, attendance, parental involvement and attitudes, and a wide range of details of daily life. Such teachers commit themselves to being accountable to each other to invent ways that their pupils can learn together. They seek to find suitable curriculum content and activities that lead to mutuality, reciprocity, and an understanding of the interdependence of their lives. They need to invent ways to communicate to support their collaboration. Finally, they have to find colleagues in other jurisdictions who have both the commitment and the means to collaborate. Given these additional elements of complexity, binational curriculum is rarely developed through large-scale intergovernmental or interinstitutional collaboration. Instead, such curricular work is usually conducted at a grassroots level on a small scale by pairs or small groups of educators, often with the support of not-for-profit, non-governmental or civil society organizations and educational leaders dedicated to fostering such collaboration. Given my interest in global education through international collaboration, I decided to develop a conceptual framework in order to establish a suitable curricular language to guide educational practice and to guide design research to advance such practice. I'll be sharing some of my first steps in constructing and illustrating a grassroots binational curricular framework. The basic situation is this. We have a school community, say in Canada, and another one in Sierra Leone or some other community, and they work together. There's communication back and forth, and through that, a progression from getting to know each other to understanding something about each other, developing some mutual understanding of each other's lives, and through that, realizing that our lives are intertwined, are interconnected, are interdependent, and so developing a sense of solidarity. And through that, coming to realize that we can act in the world together to make it a better place. Now, who are the participants or members of this community? Sometimes they're pen pals, one-to-one exchange, but what I'm more interested in is classroom to classroom. But also expanding that to the whole school community, the parents and leaders in the community, other people in the community. And a big part of what I'm working on now is expanding teacher-to-teacher talk across international borders. And even more difficult, teacher-educator-to-teacher-educator collaboration and researcher collaboration, and all of these people working together towards the benefit of the pupils and the communities. An important part of this is the internet as a mediator of our work. And I've, to simplify things, broken it down into three forms of mediation: as a channel of communication, sending email messages back and forth with content or organizational matters or getting acquainted matters, useful information. As a medium of publication, I mentioned Dal Nalioukaitis's project on landmines. So they published a lot of that information. And an online commons, a place where we can meet like around the well at the village square or circle, where we can talk or share our work, share our findings, develop knowledge. In any collaboration, it's usually the case that one uses a variety of channels, and they have to be matched to the purpose. So that requires careful planning. And careful moderation is absolutely essential. And as you'll see when I discuss my work with Sierra Leone, it's particularly critical. Then there are major themes. What is the content? Well, the content can be anything, but I'm particularly interested in grand themes of peace education, social justice, global education, democracy, and character education, all of which get varying degrees of importance in national and provincial curricula. Now, where do we get some of the ideas for this? Well, these are in alphabetical order, but I'm going to draw them to your attention in a little different order. First of all, there's a wonderful book, and one of the people who I've collaborated with a lot is Carolyn Van Gerp. She loves to read this illustrated children's picture book, Whoever You Are, by Mem Fox. And it has ways of seeing that we're the same. We cry the same way, we laugh the same way, we have blood the same. And even though there are ways that we differ, and as we grow up, we'll become different in many ways, but also the same. So that's a beautiful discussion starter. Then we have peace education curricula, such as this one developed by a Catholic organization in Sierra Leone through the Catholic aid arm Caritas, with all sorts of learning activities, and really not, really it could be used just as well there by Muslim schools, and it could be used in our schools here. So there are curricula like that. Then there are books about pedagogy, such as this one by Brantmeier. Sorry, I'm talking. That's all the same one, the Caritas curriculum. Another one that's particularly interesting, I mentioned that there isn't really very much work being done at an international level at a large scale, but these authors were part of a large Delphi process, and it was very, very comprehensive. So it's an excellent reference paper on some of the key ideas of international collaboration, but I don't think it led to actually any curriculum or very much curriculum that was actually implemented. Nevertheless, a very interesting process of discernment of what is important. There are some recent papers by some of our Canadian colleagues, Sharon Cook, who with three of her colleagues runs every fall a wonderful global and peace education symposium for teacher candidates and local teachers. So she has a very nice review of peace education in relation to global education and how it used to have its own place and really has gotten tucked within global education. Another paper in the same journal issue, actually, Canadian Journal of Education, on global education in Canadian elementary schools, again with a really good review of the literature. These are papers I have my students read. And they also really like this short article by John Walensky, just a few pages in Education Canada. So that's a really good discussion starter. And then finally, Cummins classic. Of course, Cummins and Sayers have written other books, but more recently, but I really like this one since it gives a wide spectrum of examples of telecommunications-based projects. And unfortunately, I've lost my copy, so I'm hoping I can get another copy. Well, how do we make all this happen? How do we formulate in practical terms? I've drawn heavily on the work of Carolyn Van Gerp. She has two master's degrees, one in literacy and the other in development, I believe, and as it considers herself a social justice educator. And a couple of years ago went with a colleague, Dr. Mark Turay, to Dr. Thomas Mark Turay, to Sierra Leone for a few weeks and ended up deciding that she was going to spend the rest of her life spending 8 months there out of the year and 4 months in Canada. We brought her to Queen's as a Teaching Excellence Fellow in the fall of 2008, and part of the responsibility was to produce something that would be a permanent record. So she put her ideas together in a really lovely booklet that's been distributed to the participating schools in Sierra Leone and is available online, School Twinning for a Small Planet. If you Google it, you'll probably end up with a link to Peaceful Schools International, which was founded by her sister, Hetty Van Gerp. And there you'll find a link to the activities, which she's put in really eight categories, which cover all those broad themes of social justice education, education for democracy, and so on that we mentioned just a moment ago. So Audi Body is how are you in Creole, which is a lingua franca of Sierra Leone. And then where are we in the world? You'll see that that's a very important theme in my work recently in Sierra Leone. And then what's school all about? And what about wants and needs? And where does our food come from? And what about energy and energy from the sun? And how do we get along with each other well? How do we resolve conflict? And then how do we celebrate our our religious and cultural activities? How do we make life worth living? How do we make hardship bearable through our cultural activities? So that's a wonderful short booklet with many rich ideas and some resources and photos to help teachers get discussion going and get their students working. Her guidelines, she always says, solidarity, not charity. She tries to get schools committed for at least a year so they can have several exchanges, focusing on classroom to classroom. So the communication, the rich part of it often becomes the classroom discussion, the preparation, the research for the communication that's shared with partners in another country. And then hopefully leading to some common learning and also possibly to action related to peace and the environment. Those are particular themes in her work. Back to Stephen McKinnon, who's been a wonderful collaborator and resource for my students over the years. Some very useful tips that I share with my students. Timely communication and frequent monitoring very carefully, building in time to think, to reflect, and of course to plan, and taking risks, and really keeping yourself well organized. All right, now, let's just see, what about your experience? I'd like to know, first of all, have you engaged your students in international collaboration as part of your teaching? So now you can click on the green arrow or the red, and we'll just give you a moment to do that, and then Lynn will put up the results. I'm hoping we'll get some green check marks. Well, Lynn, whenever you're, okay, there we are. So just a couple of people have, which is really interesting. And now, then, this is a separate question. Have you engaged in any sort of international collaboration with other educators? In planning international collaboration with your students? Well, there are really only two people, I guess, who would respond to that. So one has and one hasn't. Well, some others are voting as well. Okay, well, that's just very, 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 very interesting. Okay, thank you, Lynn. Let's pause now, and even though many of you have not done involved in this, it would be interesting just to get a few comments from you on what you see as the benefits of this sort of collaboration that I've been describing. And Lynn has left a blank screen, so I'll relinquish the microphone and just take the microphone in the order in which your name comes up, and Lynn will make some notes. So we'll start with Lynn.
Hi, Bill. I was just thinking that perhaps in order to, for the sake of time here, it might be easier, and for the sake of getting more people involved, we can have a few people using the audio, and perhaps a few people could type their own comments addressing those questions into the text box, and then I can just copy them over to that blank page, and that'll allow everybody to do the typing on their own comments.
Great. So then, Lynn, shall we go ahead with the presentation, or shall we pause just for a moment for comments?
No, I think. I think it's great to ask these questions. I was just going to give people the opportunity to either use the mic at this time or write their answers to those questions into the text box, and then I will copy them out. Okay? So go ahead.
Bill, it's Terry Anderson speaking. I can really appreciate and I can see the value of the exposure and the globalization implications and the fact that we live on one planet that this kind of exposure develops. I guess I think one of the reasons there's probably less response, and I'd be interested in your comment, is that I think most of our audience today and most CIDR sessions are in post-secondary education, where there may be international collaboration, but it might be students sitting beside you in class, or often in my course there's somebody from Japan or someplace else. Anyways, but my question is, how does the development of these kind of international experiences, has it survived in the increasing pressure on evidence-based and test high expectations for test results? And you know, like, I noticed that most of the outcomes are probably harder to measure, if not impossible, on a multiple choice test, which seems to be so in fashion amongst well, even parents, as well as school boards and departments of education. So I wondered how you can fit that in when, or do they see the results appearing on these kind of high-stakes tests?
Well, I see Jim has mentioned increased motivation to write. And I think what teachers who do this sort of work tend to do is to do what I call back mapping. They do what they really believe in, and then it's not hard for them to see how it's meeting curricular expectations. And certainly the increase in motivation, the quality of writing increases when you're writing for an audience, when you're working with meaningful others. So those are things that people have found, but I don't have my finger on the research on that. I'd certainly also like to get a handle on whether the level of participation in this sort of activity has gone up or down. So that's something I'll be looking for as I continue my writing in this area. I think then maybe we should move on. Is that fine, Lynn?
Yes, I just copied that down for you, and by all means, go ahead.
I'll just very briefly tell you a little bit about this course that is started a year ago. And because the sort of collaboration that I talked about, there's lots of it going on, and organizations like IIRN are huge and operate in just about every country in the world and have annual conferences, but the proportion of teachers involved in such collaboration is very small. And so teacher candidates may go through their entire practicum without seeing any or very much of this. So therefore I thought, well, let's have a course and work intensively with a small group of candidates to make them leaders in this area. Our year is, we have an 8-month post-degree program, and it's a very compressed year. You can see in the green 3-4-week practica, and then the alternate practica associated with the program focus course. It's a half-credit elective with a 3-week alternate practicum. Because that 3 weeks is preceded by the March break in Ontario, some candidates going to other countries make it into a 4-week practicum. We have other courses that overlap with this, so I had to justify it. Mine is the top row. So social justice is important in that, but also in teaching for social justice, which already existed. The collaboration is central in my course, possible in the others. Teaching abroad, they can stay home or they can go abroad. It's central in our Educators Abroad course, possible in the others. And internet use is absolutely essential, as it is in teaching and learning online. So that's the way it fits with other courses in our program. And David Pratt, like, he was a colleague who's a curriculum expert. I always like to try to have a clear aim, building capacity and objectives. And I'll just say a word about how we meet each of these. Constructing, justifying notions of global education that inform our teaching. We do that through reading and discussion and student-led discussion. Reinterpreting our experience, I'll mention in another slide an exercise we have for that. Developing a repertoire of practical possibilities, I've already mentioned a lot of those, and we get those through online guests and through things that I mention, and through reading about what people did the previous year. The developing practical resources, that candidates do in preparing for their practicum, and they get skills in using them during their practicum. And then information technology is central in all of this work. So they're learning what's possible through learning about and also working with experienced teachers. They are participating in curriculum design from a critical perspective and establishing know-how and learning to use important tools. So those are the three major parts of the course. I borrowed from Elise Boulding's classic, Building a Global Civic Culture, that she wrote for her teaching over 20 years ago, something that she calls a portfolio of global experience. And these are the categories of things that she has in it. And I do it myself. So then and we all share that. We put that in a wiki. And it gives a very, very rich portrait of each other in the class, but from a structured perspective, from the perspective of the kind of emphasis that we're placing in the class. Then we have a syllabus with readings. Some of them I've mentioned already. And right now, what's been happening in January and February that I've been missing is the really rich part of the course. And these are the topics that have been part of the candidate-led session. So quite broad topics, but I've been told that the discussions have been very, very rich and rewarding, and has also brought out a lot of very rich experience of the candidates themselves. All sorts of events, such as online guests, Peter Menzies from Dawson City. Last year we had an online conference using Illuminate with some teachers in Sierra Leone and him in the Yukon. A bit of a time zone stretch there of 8 hours, and my class. This year we just met with Peter and his grade 3 pupils, and it seemed a bit chaotic as they all came running up to the screen with the video on, and we took a snapshot of their pictures. Then we received in the mail not long after some letters with pictures of the children and a few words and questions and thoughts about teaching. So we immediately got to work and wrote letters back and mailed them out right in class. So that was an interesting exchange. It didn't go further, but it was a nice illustration of the sort of thing that we want. Now, this year for their practicum, some of them are working in classes in schools where they're doing global education related activities. Two are going to Sierra Leone to continue the work I've been just heavily involved with. Two are going up to Dawson City, where recycling and composting is critical if they're to avoid having to move their dump maybe 40 miles in just a few years. So the grade threes are going to lead the whole community in that under Peter's leadership, and two of my candidates will work with him. And they're also going to collaborate a little bit with people in Sierra Leone. A couple of people are working in multicultural or folk art centers, one in Canada, one in England. Then they're going to international schools in various countries. Some are developing international curriculum resources, and then at a variety of other places. So I'm looking forward to April sitting in on the class when they report on their practicum. Still, it's a challenge, even with all the examples, to figure out just what's right for any particular candidate and finding a suitable host professional and really building in the international collaboration. It's easy enough to do things that would count as global education, but the international collaboration is the hard part, and then just getting the logistics right. But they're up to the challenge and they're doing a great job. Information technology, as our online forum, we used Knowledge Forum last year. I've switched to PBWiki, and that seems to be working very well. We have our global portfolios in there. We have all our plans, our agenda. It's our main media for course organization, knowledge generation, information sharing, and discourse. Illuminate Live we use for online conferencing with guests when we record those, so we can refer back to them. And also some people will be using it during their practicum, and we use it for practicum planning. RefWorks for bibliography, that hasn't really gotten much traffic, but it's useful for me and if I have a teaching assistant to help with our preparation of our reading list. And then MediaWiki, I showed you the MediaWiki wiki, which we have on our server, and we use that for writing the final reports. They don't have to publish them, but I invite them to, and they typically all do. And some of them experiment with other materials as well. So, how do we benefit? Wonderful guests and experienced teachers to guide us, inspiring readings, great sharing of resources and experience, developing expertise in using the internet, making contacts for future collaboration. These are all things that at the end of last year my students told me they had benefited. And in some of their words, new ways to connect, exposed to a bunch of really dynamic projects, fantastic alternate practicum, really important global politics issues, collaboration, and benefits for others through sharing. So those are some of the things that they find beneficial about the course. Then in this year, which is the second year, we developed more practicum possibilities. They wanted a more structured syllabus of readings, and that's worked extremely well. And it's worked well also in the second half of the course to have them generate those readings and the discussion topics and lead the discussions. We're connecting with more research on global education, and we'll just continue to expand year by year. I'll pause now very briefly. I think we've almost caught up with where I'd planned to be at this time. But so if there are any quick comments or questions, we'll just do that, and then I'll go and talk about the work we've been doing with colleagues in Sierra Leone.
Bill, I'd be interested in, you talked about the internet use and mentioned using the right media, and I assume that, and then you also mentioned email quite a bit, but do you find that the digital divide is a huge stopping block for things, well, like Illuminate Live or other technologies, or do most of the partner schools that you've been working or heard about have access to the net these days?
I think I'll defer that question. I think it will get answered in the final part of the talk, because Sierra Leone is either the lowest or second lowest on the UNDP Human Development Index, whatever you make of that. But we do have one internet pipeline, and we've used Illuminate there, but everything else has to be heavily mediated, so you'll see a little bit how that works. It's possible, but it's a lot of work. And it certainly changes the nature of the communication.
Yes, Bill Muhammad here. How about the use of mobile phones in Africa? Do you see it being a way of bridging the digital divide? Has it been used quite a bit in Africa?
On the 4th and 5th last week, I attended an IDRC DFAT conference called New Africa Frontiers, and there were several sessions on the cell phone explosion, and they're being used for all kinds of things. We used cell phone modems, actually, so modems that work over the cell phone network, and that's certainly very important. But yes, cell phones are going to be increasingly important and are already very, very important in almost all of Africa. Okay, I better move on quickly to say a little bit about the Sierra Leone work. It's been, I thought when I started 5.5 years ago, I'd give it 3 years, and then after 2 years I said 5, and now I'm saying 10. Exchanging visitors has been key. We've done some research proposal development, still haven't landed a significant grant, but we're working on it. Course development I've talked about. I've done a lot of background research, as have some of my colleagues, and now the big thing for me is the school twinning. So there have been lots of workshops of some of my collaborators for teachers in rural Sierra Leone. The alternate practicum, this will be the second time I've had candidates go to work with teachers there, and it was a very enriching experience for them, and they're, even for the ones that were there 2 years ago, when I was back this January, People talked about them all the time, so they had a real impact. And then the focus course I've mentioned, and then expanding the twinning. So that's what we're working on in terms of teacher education. I'd love to get some teacher candidate exchanged through the internet, but that's another stage. So I'm working towards design research, that is theory generating research that includes cycles of local experiments from which we learn. But I've done quite a bit of background research just to get a sense of the context, which is an important first stage in design research. My colleagues Peter Jung and Catherine Nowell, who were at Nipissing, Peter's now in Jamaica, and Catherine at Western, they've done in about five countries surveys on teachers' views of education for all, including issues and problems, and that's been important background information. And I have been doing some work still analyzing that on teachers' views of the impact of the twinning. But now I think that I've spent this intensive time in Sierra Leone, I really have a much better sense of the kind of research I want to do, both in terms of small-scale experiments of communication involving parent-to-parent communication, teacher-to-teacher communication, some through online conferences like we're doing now, very few, but others through more heavily mediated communication. And then the kind of research that I want to do to assess the impact on teachers and students and community. So we can find out what sorts of efforts are really, really worthwhile. So Sierra Leone's between 8 and 9 degrees on the west coast of Africa. Our work was up here in the northern region, a neglected region until recently. I was wearing two hats and had to work very hard to keep those separate. My teacher education work focused on the school collaboration, and then I put a lot of effort, as I've been doing for several years, on helping to build up the infrastructure, both electrical and the solar powered, and also the internet. That's just very, very important. Has been critical in all our collaborative work. But it's also important to keep the two hats separate. And all of this was focused on really capacity building. So at every turn, there were lessons, both for me and for my colleagues there. My collaborators. My main collaborators are Thomas and Mark Ture, who reestablished their Center for Development and Peace Education. In Creole, they call it CD Peace, which is a wonderful name. And there's Thomas on the right, and his second in command, their administrative financial officer. This is MKK, who wears many hats, who clears things through customs, looks after visitors, looks after the multipurpose center house, and hiding there is Mary, who's now back in Nova Scotia working, but she's done a lot of gender sensitization work. So these are some of the capacity building things. And one of Thomas's metaphors that goes back even to the 70s, when people would say, well, I've prayed to God, but God hasn't provided. And Thomas says, God will provide, but you have to put something in your basket. Well, we were driving by a village where this man was making these wonderfully huge baskets. So we stopped and explained to him why it was so important for me to get a picture, and he really appreciated that. So there we have it. This is a slide I'll be using many times. My first trip was in 2006. We spent one night in the village. Here's the Paramount Chief, who's an elected for life leader that's very important in the Sierra Leonean governance, and child psychologist Chuck Emrys, who got me started in all of this. We spent a Friday there, and Friday night is Friday night at the movies. These children and adults that were clustered around under this thatched roof barre with the generator running the DVD player and the TV, watched two DVDs of King David in French with English subtitles. And immediately I thought, how wonderful it would be if what they were watching were movies that they produced themselves of their own stories and their own experience, their own heritage, which is very rich. A year later that had happened. The youth had made a video on HIV/AIDS education. Google Earth is a big thing in knowing where we are, and here you can see the village of Mapaki Community Center, the house, which is pictured down here, and this, there's a garden and a fence around here now, but you notice the antenna, that's our VSAT link to 512 kilobits per second down, 128 kilobits per second up, not typically half that rate, but that's enough for Skype and for Illuminate, including video on good days. So that's been a crucial link in all of this collaboration. Not too far from there, this triangle is land donated by families in the village of Mayagba to CD Peace, and the first building is now being built there, the administrative building. I think I'll just sort of draw it out. It's about here. There is an airstrip here. It's exactly a mile long that isn't in use now, but apparently it's going to be refurbished so that it can be used again, and that will be a real boost for the organization. So it's operating in a house in this little village here. Here's the school grounds, and here's the school in the village. So there's the multi-purpose center, which was built by a woman who was quite a remarkable story. Has raised four children on her own and found the means to be able, with help from the community, to build this house and give it over, loan it to CD Peace for their use. So it serves as an office, computer lab, and residence for visitors like me. Here's the construction materials made close at hand, a hole dug for water, sand gathered very close to the property, and even cement doesn't need to come from very far, so bricks made in forms built by the local carpenter. So that those walls are going up now as we speak. Here's the school, one building. Here's one classroom, the barre, which sometimes this would be used for a market for lunch at many schools. One of the classrooms, their timetable, you see maths, THE, and so on, and playing football. So we're doing a lot of work with that school and others. So workshops, alternate practicum, the course, and the expansion of the program are all things we're focusing on. I'd like to just share, I think I have just a moment, I'll have to go quite quickly, but a little story in a nearby village where we went in the first week of school, January, but nobody goes to school in the first week there, at least in many places. So we sat under the barre in the village with the head teacher whom we found, and I had my GPS unit, and I put in his hand a netbook computer with a modem and Google Earth. I had him type in the GPS coordinates, and it wasn't long before he saw this picture, and we started talking about what this might mean for education. So here's the transcript. I don't have time to read it all, but I asked him what he thought, and then he was taken aback a bit by my question. Come back, I mean, to repeat the question. How could we use this to help children understand the world? Well, by showing this photo, the palm trees, the mango trees. Have they ever made maps? Well, the teachers had done it. And they were involved with that, but the children, no, not the children. But he realized that this was a good thing to do, so we talked about that in some length, and we began to see all the connections that we could make. So that's an example of the sort of experimentation that I'd like to do and my teacher candidates will be doing. None of the schools that we visited have a single globe, so they'll be taking inflatable globes, as is shown here. This teacher was at a workshop that we gave where we brought representatives from all the participating schools, and during the lunch break I had some of them use the GPS unit, so he's explaining to the others how you use it, and he's holding the GPS unit over Sierra Leone on the globe and talking about how they'd use the globe. So they're all going to have globes by mid-March, and our teacher candidates will work with them on how they can use that and the GPS and maybe images from Google Earth and map making activities to start to get a broader sense of their place in the world and the place of the candidates that they're working with. So that's some very microscopic detail. Here he is talking about the globe. On the background, on the flip charts, were all the things that, that the teachers were planning to do during the school twinning. Five of them needed partners. I put out an email to Iron a couple of weeks ago. We got, thinking I'd get a few responses, 40. So now they've expanded to 17 schools. We've set up a wiki. We're starting to put school profiles in. And it's going to take me an hour or two a day at least and several hours for quite some time now to get all this going, working with my colleagues in Sierra Leone. We'll do some experimenting, as I mentioned, with live online communication. And then we have the coupling with the alternate practicum and working on teacher-to-teacher. Okay, and I see Tim saying he's going to Peru next year working with not-for-profit. That sounds great. Any advice on grant applications to subsidize the trip? Oh, no, I don't. Okay. Anyway, the Canadian teachers already that have responded to my invitation, what do they hope for? Grow as people and learners. They want to expand the small world that their candidates live in, to broaden their horizons. And then one faith-based school here need to become citizens of the world, not just citizens of our own city. So this idea of global citizenship. Very excited getting out of this smaller world. Some have studied Sierra Leone, so they want to look, they're looking forward to sharing. And then this last one was really interesting, looking forward to sharing experiences and solving problems together. So there's the whole progression from acquaintance to mutual understanding to solidarity to action. Challenges, establishing partnerships, working through misunderstandings, broken commitments, including my own. It's just very hard, balancing personal and professional. Dealing with the luxury that we have to be able to work in the way we do, to have three meals a day, and the hardship that some of our collaborators face. But they really, really want to be connected. And then trying to set this micro-level work that I've been talking about in a broader perspective. So seeing it, writing it up in ways that will influence policy, telling our story so that it fits in with a larger picture. Rewards for me, coupling of research and teaching very closely, the benefits of participants, sense of hope for all of us. I've never been as happy as I was the 5 weeks that I spent in Sierra Leone. And as much at peace. And just expanding our view of the world and getting to know ourselves better through the other, through extending who our neighbors are. And preparing teachers for more of this sort of work. And then just the satisfaction of being very, very interdependent with others. So that's the sense of community. Many, many people to thank, all my collaborators at CD Peace. I'm not sure whether any of them were able to get on today. I don't see anybody there. So maybe their connection was down today. My university, my teacher candidates, family, and Lynn and all the people that run this CIDR. So it's been just great and looking forward now to formulating a new sort of research that will allow me to continue this sort of work so that we can see what's effective and see what impact it's really having on people. Thank you very much. I think we're just about out of our time, so maybe Lynn, if I'll turn it over to you if you want to ask for a few quick comments.
Thank you, Bill. What I would like to do first is thank you for sharing this research and experience with us. You really are inspirational for the steps that you've taken to create these bridges with other nations using the internet. I mean, it's remarkable that you're actually there setting up dishes and solar panels and the telecommunications abilities to make this all possible. And I'm hopeful that we're going to continue to see these binational arrangements between our countries grow more with more connections, like Mohammed said, with cell phones and so forth. So thank you for sharing that with us. And I want to, before you go, I want to remind everybody, as you leave the room today, we have a survey that's going to pop up. And if you could take a few minutes to fill that out, that would be very helpful to us in planning future Illuminate Gensider sessions, okay? And speaking of future sessions, our next session will be taking place Wednesday, March 3rd, and that one is titled Moving Online, which is being hosted by Stephen Rowe from Southern Cross University. And Stephen has been quite instrumental in bringing online education into the university and being a real change agent there. So we're interested to see what he has to share with us next month, and hopefully you can be there to join us. And thank you again, Bill, and if you have any questions, hopefully Bill can stick with us for a couple minutes here to address those.